That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 82 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 8th of April, 2022. I'm Conal O'Moran. Episode 82 is a VIP episode because we're delighted that the boss of Enterprise Ireland, Leo Clancy, has agreed to join us for an hour-long chat about all things EI and what the state agency will be doing for your business in the future. And as always, this podcast that you say is Ireland's best business podcast is made possible thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
De Facto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
Leo Clancy, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conal. Privilege to be here.
And it's not a privilege.
It's absolutely a privilege.
We were delighted because it took a little while to find you, to catch you and to get you here, but I'm so happy that we can and will hopefully have about an hour-long chat about all things EI, because EI is so important at every level of business in this country. You might describe it to me, first of all, just in terms of employees. You've got a dirty great big budget for a start.
We do, thank God.
Did I see it's over a billion?
I think it has been in the course of the pandemic, but I'll stand back a bit and describe it. And I'm probably reasonably equipped to do it now. Conal, I've been 10 months in the job at this point. EI is an organization of over 800 people, and it's probably surprising to a lot of people in terms of the size and breadth of the agency and what we do. And we do have a budget that runs between 350 and 400 million in normal times. But obviously during pandemic, we administer a lot of the recovery supports on behalf of government.
That is a big budget, and it's a big organization.
It is.
Could the world survive if Enterprise Ireland didn't exist? Would it be another way of doing business in Ireland if the budget, 350, 400 million, which is a chunk of change, was just given to businesses and told, get on with it, give them tax breaks?
Well, I think the first question that would arise, Conal, is who would give it to business? And I think tax breaks potentially, but I'm very biased on this. And my answer is an emphatic. I think the world would be much worse off without us, which is a long way to make an emphatic statement. But I certainly think it's true. The agency will actually be 25 years old in its current incarnation next year. So we'll be heading for a 25th anniversary. This morning, actually, as we're talking, we've just had our annual startup showcase. And it was my first one as CEO, so I was delighted to attend and really understand what I've been understanding all the time that I've been in the job from our clients, the value that they see in terms of EI's contribution to their journey, whether that's starting out with entrepreneurship training through our New Frontiers program, receiving the first little bit of equity injection through the Competitive Start Fund, where we've had another 43 businesses funded in 2021, or indeed moving on to the high potential startup unit where we funded 82 companies during 2021. And all of that sounds like it's all about funding, and it's absolutely not. It's about the experience that you give entrepreneurs, the advice you give them, the platform you create to help them start, think about scaling their business, matching their ambition and giving them a platform. And we heard that in spades this morning from panelists and from the 500 people in the audience. I couldn't tell you the number of people who stopped me to thank me for my work. And my next response was, well, don't thank me because I'm the new boy. I just got here. The organization, though, has achieved a huge amount over the years. And actually, I do think our landscape would be poorer without it. And I think the budget and the size of resource space that we have is a real sign of the faith that Irish government has in the ability of enterprise to transform the economy. You know, we grew up in a country that was much poorer in economic terms. And I think the agencies that look after economic development, ourselves and IDA Ireland and Board BIA, have had a huge hand in turning that narrative around.
But I do wonder whether, yes, it has been very, very successful, but I do wonder, can it continue to be successful or will you need a new model?
I think we're always adding new elements to the model, and we're always looking back at the model that we have and asking, is it appropriate, fit for purpose? So we do inspect that all the time. I think the momentum around economic development globally by countries is growing, not shrinking. And I think we're seen as best practice within that. So I'd be interested in your thoughts actually about which model changes might be appropriate. But I think we're certainly seen as important by the ecosystem. And that can be including the very private sector oriented venture capitalists. We had Elkstone launching their new fund yesterday, up to 100 million, including 20 of our money. And that seeding of that fund was crucially important to the subsequent raise.
Now, that's interesting that you bring up funding, because one of the big problems that startups do have still in this country is funding. If you guys didn't exist, I think the place would be hugely poorer for it now, but that is state money. Actual investment money from seasoned professional investors, not a lot of it about. Compare that, say, to the States, just nothing like it.
That's true all over Europe, actually. So Europe at the commission level and elsewhere constantly talks about the gap between the states and what's available here. We've been part of changing that narrative from an Irish point of view. Are we there yet in terms of equivalence with the US? We're not. Will we get there anytime soon? I actually don't think we will at all stages of funding.
And
where
what,
we intervene
is
at
about?
The seed stage.
What is it about that we're not in that same frame of mind or that same attitude about investing?
I think it's maturity of ecosystems, you know, and if you look at Europe, I think the US came out of the Second World War and the venture capital community started in that ecosystem. I think Europe was slower to start and probably more regulated, you could argue more bureaucratic in terms of the approach. So the freewheeling capitalism that exists in the state isn't replicated in Europe. And I think that's, you know, that sounds like a very broad answer, but I think it's broadly true as well. You know, capital wasn't looking for risky bets in the same way that it was open to do so in the States. And I think it's a factor of the nature of capitalism that exists in the United States at a very top level. At the other level, I think actually we're potentially more interventionist from a state perspective than the US at different levels. So there's an interesting contrast, but I think it is a difference in models,
and
economic models.
Are you thinking that in, or are you advising government on ways of trying to attract more external funding, investors and investments?
Well, we are, and we have. So this the round of funds we're closing out now, of which the one I mentioned yesterday is the first one that we've announced in a little bit of time, will amount to about 175 million euros of investment by the state through Enterprise Ireland over the period from 2019, by the time we've closed out the current rounds. That is a huge injection of seed capital that will leverage at least two times the money that the state's putting in from private sector. It will be more than two times, that's probably certain. And if you look at the one yesterday, it's 100 million leveraged by 20. So it is much more. So we're very confident that the state does, when we recommend interventions such as seed and seed capital, does react and does fund those. You'll have seen the recent launch of the Irish Innovation Seed Fund as well in February. And again, that's ourselves and ISIF and the European Investment Fund coming together to put together a 90 million fund of funds, fund of funds program that will go to seed and very early stage pre-A round investments.
What is more state money? And
more.
Now, about that, I wonder, do you ever hear whispers from our lords and masters over in the EU? They don't like state intervention. They don't like countries giving businesses money.
I'd argue that they do, actually, and in many different ways. But European Innovation Council is one area where they do intervene. And actually, Irish companies have been very successful in winning multi-million euro funding packages through the EIC. So I think the European Union certainly doesn't like anyone breaching state aid law, which is a completely different thing, and we'd absolutely concur with that. But within EU state aid law, there's ample opportunity for states to intervene and provide incentives based on market failure and the incentive effect they provide to actually bootstrap business cases for projects and funding.
Into the future, I'm sure you remember the days when we wanted to have a Nokia here. That was the gold standard. I don't think anybody particularly needs a Nokia nowadays. What are you hoping for that you might grow? When I say you, that Enterprise Ireland might grow, what areas that you think we should into the future now? We know what we're already doing, but what could we be looking at?
I think if you look at some of the emerging areas that are really interesting, you've got the areas we've always been strong on, like medical devices, medical services. I think there's opportunities to grow there. We've seen Icon PLC, which is one of the great homegrown success stories, that's now the biggest company in its field operating out of Ireland. I think there's room for more companies in the health space. I think digital services, very interesting. If you look at the slew of unicorns we've seen recently with Let's Get Checked, Flipdish, and others achieving unicorn status, we've shown that we can build those digital business models really quickly. I think a lot of that harks back to maybe my last, harking back to maybe my last job at IDA, leading the tech sector, is because of an ecosystem we've created that understands how to do tech on a global stage. And I'm very excited about that. I think food still has a lot of potential for us in terms of new food business models. And then there's areas such as agri-tech, where I don't think we've even begun to explore the potential that we have to take Ireland's agricultural heritage and make it leading on the global stage.
One of the issues that you will face, that the country will face, is the absence of trained, skilled employees. And I had Brian Caulfield, the renowned investor, on the podcast, and his argument was quite simple. We need to start teaching digital in schools.
I agree. I agree with that. And I think we are doing it already in schools. I think we need to start earlier and earlier. So I think having computer science now on the Leaving Cert curriculum for the last number of years is a very positive step towards that. I know my own kids are at various stages of secondary school and primary school, and they're getting more and more exposure to digital, but I think we need to accelerate that, I'd agree.
Because Eastern Europe has so far, as I understand it, so far ahead of us?
I think it depends on where you, on what question you're asking. I think Eastern European states are wonderful at numerous disciplines such as maths, computer science, physics. You know, they really excel in those deep technical disciplines. I think in Ireland, actually, we have a population growing up that is a population of digital natives in the broadest sense. And I think the trick for us actually is to have more of those focused on being specialists in STEM subjects, and particularly among girls and women. You know, we need to rebalance our gender mix of our engineers. Scientists, I think we do better than average, but certainly on the engineering side, we need to do more.
And when you say that you want to do more, who kicks whose bottom to get that done?
I think there isn't anyone in the ecosystem who doesn't believe this is a good thing. And there's a huge amount of programmatic support for this. So I don't think it's for a want of trying, to be honest. Where I do think the gap starts, and this is from my own children's experience, is probably even as early as that transition from primary into secondary school, where you've got girls going into what were convent schools, potentially, where digital literacy and potential careers in tech aren't the vernacular of the school. And I think at that level, we lose a lot of kids from the system. So I think it's about those programs that can intervene as early as possible to emphasize the importance. And I've seen my kids go through the programs on this, and the programs are really good. They expose the kids first year, second year, to an engineering career. Some exemplars come in and talk to them. But I think it has to be deeply ingrained within the teaching ethos of the schools. And I don't think we're there yet, but I think it is changing year by year. It does take time, though.
And COVID has had an interesting change in work practices that we know, obviously working from home. But it also meant that many very, very highly skilled people from, say, Eastern Europe or across Europe went home, and they worked for Irish companies from home, be that Poland, Lithuania, whatever. Are they going to come back?
I think it'll be a mix. Some people will come back, some won't. If you look at what's happened post-pandemic, a lot of the countries that people went home to over the period for which they were out of their home countries, those economies had resurged and improved. And I think when people went back, they found more opportunity than they'd left. And they might stay because of that. Remote working has become a feature of how people work, and the skills market, particularly at the top end of technology and related skills, has tightened. So I think those factors mean that companies will certainly be more forgiving around where their people work from. And I think all of those broadly are good things for companies and good things for the employees. I think, though, and I've been experiencing this in the last 8 weeks in particular, the value of the workplace, the value of being back and working in person and innovating together, the serendipity of the things that you learn when you're bumping into people every day, I think we shouldn't underestimate those factors either.
When or where will we find the, how can we replace the skills that have gone home?
I think we will continue to attract people to this country. It's a very attractive ecosystem. And even this week, we've seen large multinational job announcements. We have seen this morning our startup showcase, where we've showcased the best of Irish entrepreneurship and the real cutting edge companies that you can work for. And I think that ecosystem, in my view, is unparalleled across Europe. And I think we'll continue to attract people who want to be part of the location in the country which can offer them the biggest opportunities to grow within their career. So I think we'll still see inward migration from Europe. We're seeing very high demand for visas from non-European locations as well. So we see a huge population that wants to come here and work from there. And we are seeing continuous development of our third level system in terms of adding places, particularly in technical disciplines, to increase the number of and output of STEM and engineering graduates.
Actually, I hadn't thought of asking you this question, but it's something that tickles my head a lot. Do our universities function, how can I put it nicely, are they efficient? Could they not double up the numbers of students that they are currently training by maybe working longer and churning out more trained kids?
I think I would be very reluctant to give you a straight answer to that, because actually I don't have one that's probably very well informed. I think what we, universities are very careful about the, balancing the quality and the quantity of what they do. And I think rightly, we need to make sure not just that we have people stamped on the head with qualifications, but that they come out industry ready. And I think universities, technology universities and IOTs are rightly very cautious of that mix. I think they are very flexible though, and we've seen this over the years with SkillNet interventions, with Springboard and with other forms. They're very innovative at working out new ways to get things delivered that are industry ready and leading edge, in my view, in terms of what's comparable in other countries. So I worked for 8 years before this job selling Ireland to multinationals for tech, and almost universally, they were blown away by the flexibility, the openness, and the engagement of the universities versus what they experienced in their home markets.
You're also familiar, you were an engineer for 12 years, I think, with Ericsson, is that right? So you're familiar with the term sweating the assets. And I do look at large third-level institutions, and I wonder that they could go for a longer day and with not so long holidays so that you get more people through.
Yeah, I've never had trouble getting hold of them during, including during summers. But yeah, I think there is a balance to be struck though, and I think the universities would argue that they have teaching loads and research loads and various other things that they do. I think, in fairness to the universities, and I had the pleasure of meeting the presidents of the key universities only in the last few weeks. They are really concerned about how they can do more and how they can do more while maintaining that quality. Industry, by the way, thinks the same thing. So if you talk to any of our engineering companies or tech companies, they'll also say to you that there is no point in increasing the output in and compromising the quality. That just doesn't work.
I'll ask you about housing in a second, but I still have to take, first of all, a little ad break. So I'll be back to you in a second.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural de facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to de facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to de facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
So, Leo, if I can ask you now about housing. Now, I'm not expecting you to fix the housing issue, but it is an issue. And for people coming from abroad, once they find out that they cannot find a house or an apartment in which to live, that is a massive problem, which, again, will not be sorted in the short term which means it must be some kind of a roadblock for companies here in hiring quality workers.
It certainly is. And I don't think anyone anywhere in the ecosystem would deny that. If you, and I think if you look at the evidence of that, this is the issue that is top of government's agenda. So the housing action plan is underway. There's a comprehensive suite of issues. And as you know, a very long list of things that government is working on to resolve it. None of them will be delivered overnight. Actually, Enterprise Ireland has actions under that housing action plan. We're creating a construction technology centre over the coming months, and or rather funding one. And we're also making available our supports to increase and enhance productivity and innovation in the house building sector. But as you say, none of it happens overnight. And for now, it is a problem for industry and for individuals that we would want to attract to come and work here, not to mention our own citizens who want to get on the housing ladder and have a place to live.
Brexit. That must be a word that you just love hearing.
I came to this job after much of the heavy lifting had been done by my colleagues in Enterprise Ireland on Brexit, but it certainly hasn't gone away. And some of the factors of the new trading relationship with the UK are yet to come.
So let's talk about that. What do you think is going to happen? Do you know? Does anybody know?
Well, I can't comment on the politics and anything that is the subject of political discussion at the moment and shouldn't, given my role. What I can say, though, is that Enterprise Ireland has, over the last 5 and 6 years, intervened in detail with our base of companies that export to the UK. And the UK still accounts for about 30% of our exports, so it's a massive market. It will continue to be a massive market, and our ambition is to keep that share of market steady over the coming years, which actually means increasing it substantially. What we've done is launched supports for companies to hire people to help them to deal with new customs regulations. We've helped people do innovate around products, even to be more duty reducing in certain cases where they can use different materials and substances. And that's at the very extreme end, small numbers of companies, and everything in between. So we've intervened in detail. My assessment actually of Enterprise Ireland's client base is that people have worked really hard and well to make themselves ready for Brexit. And I think when the new customs regulations are finally implemented, I think Irish business will be broadly ready. That's not to say we won't have companies that experience problems as the final elements are introduced, but I think Irish business has done a superb job of making itself ready.
And am I right in saying that's due in June or July?
I think the dates have, well, you know, the dates have moved, but there are a couple of dates yet to come, but July is the next substantial one.
And what's the big change in July, can you remember?
It's off the top of my head, no, but veterinary inspections is one of the big areas yet to come, and that's for product and food product and areas like that. So certifications, customs and border checks and veterinary inspections are some of the areas that need to be dealt with. And again, I think business has a very strong appreciation. The fact that the date has moved a couple of times has actually helped Irish business, because there were a couple of false dawns that where people had to be ready. So I think it has helped us to have a couple of trial scenarios that we've been through, and business has, I believe, is substantially ready.
And what about the switch that you must have seen of Irish companies looking for suppliers that they did switch out of the UK? Have you seen evidence of that?
Some evidence of that. But actually, overall, I would say the exports and imports in and out of the UK is much smoother than we would have anticipated or feared back in 2016. So I think things are working quite smoothly. One factor we've definitely seen is that people exporting to Europe have been very appreciative of the work done by government and the transportation industry on direct shipping to France and other locations. And that has been a game changer, actually. So a lot of businesses that would have sold into Europe are being asked by their buyers to prove that there isn't a dependency on the land bridge. And even though we believe the land bridge is still substantially working, having that option and that proof point that we don't depend on it is crucially important.
I was actually tweeting the other day about the land bridge at Dover. There were 20-mile tailbacks, I think. It's a mess. But anyway, we'll move on. What about the future of other markets? Obviously, you're forever, presumably, out with your microscope looking for new opportunities for Irish companies abroad. Mm-hmm. And you've got, is it 23 offices worldwide?
40 around the world. 40 outside Ireland.
Okay. So they presumably are feeding intelligence back again to you. Where should Irish companies be looking now?
I think wherever they have the best product market fit, to give you a short answer, and that's a terrible answer. I think the markets we see is having the biggest potential, and it really does depend on your product and your market. Eurozone, we think, is going to be a very strong growth market. Northern Europe has been very strong for us in recent years in terms of Scandinavia. But we think Eurozone will continue to be a strong market. And actually, I feel that Eurozone has been underexploited by Irish exporters, particularly in services and digital space over the years. My last job was about convincing US companies that Ireland was a great place to do business for all of Europe from. But not as many Irish companies have exploited that European selling opportunity as might have, I think, versus the UK and the US, which are... same language, next port of call.
You took the words out of my mouth. It's about the language, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's another failing. I don't know whether we want to blame people, but we're not great at languages.
No, but we don't need to be, because we have access to that global talent pool that wants to come and work here. And if you look at the...
But if you're trying to sell to France or Germany, and if you don't speak French or German, you're missing the trick.
Well, the question actually is whether as a graduate from no matter what your level of language proficiency, you will speak it well enough to close a sale. And if you look at Google, Facebook, and the many other companies that are selling Europe-wide out of Ireland, they have people who have come from those jurisdictions and are native language speakers working out of Ireland and selling back into those jurisdictions. We're the third or fourth most diverse workforce in Europe at this point. The ones ahead of us, the last time I heard, were Cyprus, Malta, and Luxembourg, so much smaller countries even than us. But more of our workforce is non-Irish born at this point than any country of our size in Europe. And I think that's a bit that we underappreciate. So you can hire a French person who's made their life in Ireland, or a German person, or a Dutch person, and they're the people who will lead on your sales. But that is not to discount
that they're salespersons, because they may be digital geniuses, but not very good at selling.
No, but many have come to Ireland for that very purpose of creating those massive shared services centres that locate here. But that's not to discount the value of a language, because I certainly have relations who have worked with some of our very strong growing Irish companies and have language proficiency and have sold into those European markets. But I actually think we could do more. Notwithstanding local levels of language proficiency, I think there's a lot more we can do into Europe. The other locations, I think US, I think, has enormous untapped potential for Irish companies. And it's a very strong market for us. I think it could be even stronger.
So why is that not exploited more so?
I think it's a big deal. It's a big investment. And this goes back to your very first question. Where do companies get growth capital from? And companies in the US attract a lot of capital very early, because they go on a scaling journey, which involves selling. It involves scaling their operations across the United States in nearly all cases first before they go elsewhere. And it requires a lot of money. I think that potentially has been a barrier for Irish companies over time. Don't get me wrong, it still is one of our most successful markets, but could be a much higher percentage of our exports, I think.
And will EI do anything about that? By that, I mean, make it easier for people to set up in the States?
We do that already. So
You may do more.
Well, we will. We'll do more of the good things we already do, and we'll do more of the new things that help. So we have a couple of ways that we help. First of all, we have an instruments which help companies do market discovery. So we fund people to do their market discovery studies, to attend trade shows, to try and make their first sales. But our advisory network and capacity is our other piece that people underestimate about EI very often. You know, we have people in all of those US offices who understand the local markets, who have contacts that can help companies share experiences with one another, get started, connect with advisors, and help them get their presences established. And we also are helping companies more with their funding and scaling journeys. So the second pillar of our recently released strategy is all about scaling solutions for companies. And we have a new team that's focused on funding solutions for companies to help them scale and grow and continue to prosper as Irish companies overseas.
A new team would suggest to me that you may have new products coming from the new team. Anything that you want to tell that great business show that's coming down the line?
Not yet, actually, because we look at everything through the lens of, is there a market requirement? And actually, one thing that's certainly true today, which we didn't touch on in the early conversation, is that more capital is aware of Ireland now than ever before. So more global capital. And the world is flatter, I think, from a capital finding and investable opportunities than it has ever been. So my first question to the team is, do we need to fund things, or do we need to be a connector of funding with things that need funding? And actually, I think there's bigger opportunity in the latter than what a sovereign state could ever put into companies directly.
And how do you tap into that ecosystem?
It goes to relationships, and it goes to connecting and brand marketing and making sure that investors are aware of our companies and that we have the networks to help connect them in when the need arises.
And we will help on this That Great Business Show, because we can connect anybody who wants to go to the States into Connecticut. Connecticut wants their business to be based there, and they will help hugely. The LEOs, the local enterprise offices, 31 of them, isn't that right, Jim? It was, and I'm sure you won't go into the politics of it, but I think it was Big Phil Hogan, I think, who once upon a time took your LEOs away and gave them to local authorities, but you still have this kind of family relationship with them.
We do. So our relationship is that we disperse the funding to the LEO and local enterprise offices, and we have a center of excellence which provides a framework for operations, but the local enterprise office staff are members of the local authority groups, and they have individual heads locally. But we work hand in hand with the LEOs, and that will even be more true. If you've read our recent strategy, you've seen that we are certainly enhancing the relationship with the LEOs. I met just this week, actually, all of the heads of the LEOs. I don't think there was 31 people in the room, but certainly nearly all of them were there and re-emphasized the need to have a continuum of support for an entrepreneur from when they think about starting a business and might talk to their local enterprise office till they float on the NASDAQ. And we want that to be absolutely transparent. That absolutely depends on ourselves and the LEOs being absolutely at idem in terms of what our respective offerings are.
But, and I wonder whether you'll actually comment on this, it makes no sense having them tied into the local authority. They are yours. It's genetically you're the same.
I won't comment exactly on your question, but what I will say is it doesn't matter. If we have, and it comes down again to relationships, and we talked earlier on about collegiality, it doesn't matter where someone reports. What matters is the shared sense of mission and purpose that we have. And that's my belief. And no matter what aspect of the job I do or any job I've ever done, I believe it's the shared purpose that makes the difference, not the line reporting or structure.
And then Uderos, they have another relationship there with Uderos. And the one that I, when I was reading your annual report, that I saw, the Design Council comes under you as well, isn't that right?
And funding does,
Which, well, funding therefore means that you have a great interest, maybe a great influence.
But again, you respect differences. So the other thing about shared purpose is you work at where you share purpose and mission, and where you should work actively together, as we do on Showcase. So the Design Showcase, which runs every year, ran very successfully at the end of February. We work together with the Design and Crafts Council and with the local enterprise offices to make that event a success, and we work hand in glove on that. Do we have competence on how to do design or what the right approach is or how to train designers? We don't. And that's something that the DCC needs to do it for itself. So I think in all these relationships, we work out where we can add value together. And my philosophy is always that it has to be a two-way partnership. So whether we fund an agency that's associated with us or whether we work with them loosely on a shared mission, it's about coming together, understanding who those others are, and working out how to get things done together.
It sounds very collegiate and very nice. And I'm told, because I told you before we started this interview, that people say that about you, that that is your approach. But does it need people to kick other people? This is my second time suggesting people get kicked. Move things along for greater success. I'm thinking aloud here that the Israelis, who loved, past tense, I think, the EI model, they just adopted it, I gather. But I know how aggressive they are in what they're doing across the States, for example. Will that level of aggression, of purpose, of pushing, apply with EI?
I've met loads of Israelis involved in the startup ecosystem over the years and people in tech ecosystem, and I really enjoy working with them, actually, because there's no more direct conversation than you'll have with an Israeli. And
very true.
I've had very many very long meetings that have extended to all of 10 minutes with Israeli people. So I think they're good at getting to the nub of things. And when you say aggressive, actually, I've found them very collegial also. I think you have...
Aggressive in a positive way.
They're positive, proactive. No, absolutely. And I think working out early what your shared agenda is, and that those 10-minute meetings, you know, an Israeli person will ask you why you're here, what we're going to do together or not, work it out early. And then if there's something to be done, they'll work on it with you. If there's not, it's a handshake and goodbye and we'll see you when there is something relevant. I think there's a lot to that. We're different in Ireland, though. You know, our way of doing business is probably less direct than that, less very direct than that. But we're still quite direct, actually, as a nation. You know, Irish people are not afraid to, as someone said, ask for the order or ask what the purpose of something is, to our great credit. But coming back, I don't think directness means that you lose collegiality or the ability to establish a shared purpose. I think the two go hand in hand, actually. And the more collegial you are and the more trust you build with people, I've always found, and this is true no matter what walk of life, the more you can be direct because people know you don't mean it in a bad way. I think it's when people sit in different rooms and different organizations and scheme about one another in a two towers sense, that's when problems arise. So the big thing for me, and I've always found this, is to go out and meet the person, establish a human trust-based relationship, and then you can work from there and do it before you need something from them is the other philosophy I have. Just go out there so that we can pick up the phone to one another and agree when something needs to be done.
I'm going to have to take another quick break. I'm here with Leo Clancy, who is the boss of EI, and we'll be back in just a few seconds.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of DeFacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
I'm here now with Leo Clancy, who is the CEO of EI. Lots of acronyms there. Question for you, the future, not in your future, the future of this country, inflation is going to do us in.
I don't believe that's true, Conal. I think inflation is a huge issue for us at the moment, and that's unavoidable. It's a huge issue everywhere in the world. I think in some areas of our economy, it's more exacerbated than in other countries. In some areas, we're better off than others. You know, we have somewhat more gas independence, for instance, in the recent crisis than other parts of Europe. So I think it varies, but it's a huge issue for business. I think it is feeding in massively to business costs, particularly with the awful tragedy that's unfolding in Eastern Europe. And I think the brutal war of aggression by the Putin administration has turned an already bad situation into a desperate situation for the poor people of Ukraine and the Russians who are losing their lives in Ukraine also. So that's awful. I think important to recognize that before we get to the economic consequences. They are dire, but I think business is responding really well. Talking to business leaders, they're very innovative about how they deal with the challenge, both in terms of efficiencies they can glean within their operations, alternative sources of supply where things are running low, and ultimately being able to negotiate new price arrangements with their customers. Now, that is all at the business level. Obviously, inflation affects every man, woman, and child in the country in terms of the money that they have to spend for their goods and services. But I think we are going to have to deal with that in the coming months, and that's something government is very focused on broadly.
EI and the Leos are all very keen on mentors and mentoring. Do you have a mentor?
I do not currently, no.
Had you
I have had, yeah, at various points. Yeah.
Useful?
Very useful. And actually, when I say I don't, I probably take input from so many people that I won't say I don't need it because I don't have a personal one at present, but I certainly look to listen first and learn from people. And in my job, I have the absolute privilege of meeting so many people that you get a huge amount of different perspectives. I did have in the past, and it certainly is very useful. And I'd advise anyone, and my former self included in my 20s, to go out there and get a mentor and someone who doesn't know you well that can advise you, because I think it's crucially important.
That's very interesting. In your 20s?
Yes.
Yeah, that would make sense, all right, yeah.
I don't think enough people have done it.
I didn't.
No.
And it probably would have been a very good idea.
I spent a couple of years avoiding taking on a formal management role, for instance, when it was an inexorable future for me, actually, that I would be a manager. I toyed with it, had some bad experiences, but didn't bite the bullet, actually, until I was 30 when I took up my first management job formally. I could have been there 5 years earlier.
And what held you back?
Pardon?
What held you back?
I thought I was a great engineer, which actually was. if I'm allowed to be slightly less humble than I normally try to be, I was a very good engineer, and that held me back in that fear of leaving behind the engineering competency that I had was one part, and the worry about whether I would make a good manager. But no matter how much I tried to avoid taking on that next level of responsibility, I kept drifting back into taking it. And ultimately, I got to the tipping point where I wanted to have more impact than I could have on my own, no matter how good my engineering skills.
Do you engineer at all at this stage?
Not at all at this point.
When was the last time?
I meddle with my IT people to their incredible distraction every now and again.
I was looking at your LinkedIn, and it may be out of date, but did I see that you also, do you listen to some guy in the States on podcast, Verschuler or something like that, maybe? Must be historic. It comes up on your LinkedIn
does
page.
It? Does interesting. It?
Because I went down that rabbit hole.
Did you?
He's got it. Now, as you know, I have a cue ball head. I am as bald as the guy that you possibly did listen to. He's on number 200 or something. I can't remember his name now. He's got one mass of mop of a head. I'll tell you, whatever he does, I would love to have whatever. Yeah.
My favorite podcast, apart from yours, Connell, is Tyler Cowen's Conversations with Tyler. That's the one I listen to most religiously, I would say.
And what does that teach you?
That teaches me, first of all, I don't know if you're familiar with Tyler Cowen, but he's an incredible mind. So it teaches me the importance of not being overly focused on everything that's happened to you day to day in your job and broadening your mind. And he deals with everything from technology through medicine, through art and various disciplines. So, but every episode teaches you new things. So as does yours. So I'm an inveterate podcast listener. I run a lot. So when I'm running, that's when I listen to my podcasts. And I live in Nace as well. So a lot of my commuting involves podcasts.
You don't run into work from Nace, do you?
No, I don't. I run around Nace typically. I have toyed with it though, but no, not yet.
You'll be getting up at 5 a.m. or something to get in. What's the future for you? I know you're only just a wet day in the place, 10 months, as you said.
Yeah.
And you have a 7-year term, is that right?
5-year term.
5-year, okay. Yeah. So what'll happen in 4 years' time?
I don't know, that's a long way away. I'm looking to be able to think about tomorrow, so... No, I don't know. I'm always a believer that I haven't tended to make plans on that beyond 5-year time frame. So I think my first priority is to settle in further at Enterprise Ireland. We're just coming back to the office setting. So actually, even today, I've met 10 colleagues that I hadn't seen face to face so far in my 10-month tenure. So for me, currently, the priority is settling into this job. I'm really enjoying the CEO role. So for me, it's to continue to build that career and have more impact. So no matter where my career takes me, Connell, in the next 10 to 15 years, I want to have more impact.
You see, you could have been there 5 years earlier.
Could have been there 5 years earlier. So
but it doesn't actually work that way, because you were being prepared, if you like. Every passing day teaches you something.
You were, but if I was speaking to my younger self, I would say... explore more in your 20s. We grew up in an economy that was much more constrained than this one. And the priority was to get a job, a good, well-paying job, and ideally a job in the public service. So at age just before 40, I finally made my mother happy and got that public service job that she'd always been wishing for me. So I think we took a very risk-based approach, many of us. I think the population today, and with the opportunities that are around and demographics, there are going to be many opportunities ahead of youngsters. So if there was one opportunity I would encourage young people to take as they leave college, it's to look at entrepreneurship or working in an entrepreneurial company early in their career. Experience that. I've done both. I worked for a big multinational for 13 years and I worked in a 32-person Irish company for 4.5 years. And between those...
What was the smaller company?
eNett was the smaller company.
What, so we
were
there,
I was effectively CTO of eNett for 4 years. So we were... it was a wonderful experience going from a large company to a much smaller one. I resigned on the day that Lehman Brothers collapsed in 2008 and started my job in the first month that the company hadn't taken an order in its 3-year history, when rooms were selling in the Adair Manor for €25.
Okay.
Yeah. Based in Limerick. So that was a big career choice. My first job move in the teeth of all that. But it was a wonderful experience. And I think for youngsters starting out now, the breadth of experience, the closeness to business that you get when you work in a small entrepreneurial firm just can't be beaten.
And do you ever yearn yourself do you look at some of these companies and say, God, that's so exciting. I wish I was that person. I wish I were that entrepreneur.
Only twice a day or so.
Okay. Well, do you?
I do. No, it is being close to the business. I love the job I do now. And I'm, again, privileged. I use that word a lot because I believe I have a privileged job. I am privileged every day to see a multitude of business models. And I would say for anyone looking at a job, and to put in a plug for our organization, Enterprise Ireland and IDA, my former organization, give you an MBA a day in terms of the exposure you have to business models and other people's businesses. So the learning opportunity is massive. And that's what's kept me doing this job for 9 years in various guises, that you get to learn so much about global business that you can't see working in just one firm.
And are you hiring at the moment? I had Harry Goddard of Deloitte on a couple of weeks ago, and he's only looking for 600 people.
We're less than that, but we're hiring, and we're always hiring. It's a great organization to work in, and I can recommend it to anyone. So feel free for people to connect with me and link in with me if they're so motivated.
There you go. There's the CEO of Enterprise Ireland offering to link in with you. You know, we have another question that we always ask on every podcast. We ask people, who would they hire in a heartbeat? Who would Leo Clancy hire in a heartbeat?
I would hire my brother Dennis in a heartbeat. He's a guy, he not just because he also did engineering, and he didn't do it because of me. He probably did it despite me. He's 8 years younger than me, but he's a person that I trust implicitly in terms of his motivations. He's now the IT manager with CARE, the charity, and that was a deliberate career choice for him based on both the IT role that he wanted to have, but even more so because of the contribution he wanted to make to the purpose. And he's a guy who probably one of the kindest individuals I know.
That's a very interesting observation, because somebody I was talking to about you kind of said more or less the same thing about you. Where does that come from?
I don't know, and it's very kind and generous.
Well dragged up, were you?
We were well dragged up in South Tipperary by a farmer father and a dairy farmer father and a teacher mum, and taught to value being good to people. So I think that comes through. But I have to say, my brother now puts me to absolute shame in terms of his way with people.
Do you think that we can ride out all the issues that we've got? War in Ukraine, we've got inflation, we've got no housing, we've got this, that, and the other. If I were to look at the end of your tenure, well, you may be reappointed. If I look forward 4 years, what will the business landscape in Ireland be like in 4 years' time?
I think we're in a really positive place, notwithstanding all the headwinds. This economy's never been stronger. It's never been more diverse.
It's curious that way. It is. I mean, yeah. I agree with you. And it's like almost you need to pinch yourself and say, why?
Well, we're great in Ireland at knocking ourselves and seeing the negative. I think people everywhere are like that, but the Irish have a particular knack at this. I think we're a country that's diversified. And even versus 2013, when I started my last job, we're hugely diversified within industry. My goal, ambition, and what I hope to realize over the next 4 years is that Irish industry will be stronger and have even more diversity than it has today. that we will have more fast-growing Irish companies that have global ambition, and over time that we will see more PLCs that are Irish-owned and more Irish leaders staying Irish and making their impact around the world while remaining Irish.
All sounds like good stuff. Leo Clancy, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 82. So please share, like, retweet this podcast with all of your connections on social media. And do it now, please, before you forget. It's just a click of a button for you, but for us, it means commercial success. And make it easy on yourselves to enjoy your favorite business podcast. Press the subscribe button now, and don't be shy. Tell your pals in business about us too. And you can always talk to us on our LinkedIn page. Great brands like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, Isme, Virgin Media, Udder Ostergaard, to advertise with us. Your business should do likewise. Give us a bell anytime and we'll have a chat with you about that. And we also want to be known as the world's best sounding business podcast. And that's why we work with our great friends here at the Dublin Podcast Studios in Dundrum, including today's sounder engineer, Mark Microphone McCarthy. I think he likes that. Later on, Peter Rice will add in stings and zings, all helping make us stand right out from the ordinary. And the Dublin Podcast Studios are, like ourselves, open for business. If you want to make a podcast, check the new website and then have a chat with Peter Rice. As always, That Great Business insights that you hear on That Great Business Show are only made possible thanks to our sponsor, the great makers of the world's best shaving oil, De Facto. Made in Mayo, sold worldwide. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have a regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conall O'Moran, Mhuire Buachas, agus slán tamall.